This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on with you, Katie?
I just finished these notes. I thought that today was Friday and that I had another day to do these notes because we were like, oh yeah, we'll record on Saturday. So I thought I had more time when I woke up this morning than I actually did have to do these notes. So I'm a little confused, if I'm being honest. I'm very confused time-wise as to what day it is and what's going on. Yeah, very confused.
I'm so sorry. I just sneezed really hard. Just taking a moment to come back from that. I feel like time is nothing anymore for the last couple years, so it's understandable.
Yeah, time is completely meaningless. I mean, I texted you the other day and I was like, I don't think I have the attention span for real life anymore.
I can't remember if I responded back to that or not, because I think you sent it to me while I was at work.
I did.
And I'm gonna be honest, same.
That's what you said. You're like, yeah, I feel that.
Okay. Let's see what's going on for me. I wanted to tell you this story, but I was waiting to do it on here.
Yeah, I was like, don't you dare forget what happened. Like, you just were like, oh, I have a story to share.
So today is my anniversary, my wedding anniversary.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't forget. Happy anniversary.
Gigi is the only one who's texted us about it.
Good old Gigi. I don't know how I forgot, because your anniversary is the day before my mom's birthday. I don't know.
It's also 10/15/20, which is honestly kind of why I picked that date. So it was really easy to remember.
Yeah, that is really easy to remember. I can't believe I forgot that.
Speaking of easy to remember, here's my story. So I went out last night to the Eastern State Penitentiary. Penitentiary? That's a weird word to say.
It is a weird word.
So I went out last night to the Eastern State Penitentiary with some friends. And then by the time I got home, because it's all the way in Philly, by the time I got home, it was after midnight. And Dan was outside on the porch when I was walking up the stairs. And he turns to me with like such a confident look on his face. And goes, like, opens his arms out to me to hug me. And goes, happy 1 year of being married.
Oh, no.
The gusto with which he said it. He was so confident in how many years we've been married. And I was just like, two. It's been two. We got married in 2020. I went 10. 15/20. I love him so much, though. I was like, I love the confidence.
He knew the day. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what day it is. And then he was like, yeah, the past couple years, time has meant nothing. And I was like, you know what? Yes. Time just melts together for the last 2 years.
1 year, two years, 5 years.
Full circle conversation.
God damn. Yeah. That's so funny. I'm still so jealous. I wanted to go to that penitentiary.
See? It's a tough word. I'm going to leave that other thing in. I'm not going to edit it out. Yeah.
Now that I've brought it back. I wanted to go to that, and I'm really jealous that you went. And this, I literally messaged her when she posted her photo on Instagram, and I was like, oh, and yet you won't watch scary movies with me, but you'll go to a haunted prison.
I purposely didn't respond to that because I just wanted to tell you in person that I'm okay with going into those things, because especially at a place like that, I don't have the glow stick around my neck telling them that they're allowed to touch me. So like, I have control over it. I don't have control over what happens in scary movies.
Well, no one touches you in a scary movie.
But I don't have control over like what's going to happen.
But you can pause it. I'm just going to keep gaslighting you until I convince you to watch a scary movie with me, because I love scary movies so much. Speaking of, Mike and I went to go see that movie Smile yesterday.
Oh.
That new holy shit is the scariest movie we've ever seen. Mike got scared. Mm. Mike doesn't get scared. It's very scary. So just a heads up on that. Yeah, don't know. Don't watch it. I left the theater like, I'm genuinely afraid right now. And it's been a while since a movie has scared me.
Okay, so this is another reason why I don't watch the scary movies. Because as we discussed in our dreams episode, I don't really dream that much. But when I watch something scary, boy, do I have nightmares. And I don't want to do that to myself.
That's fair. That's totally fair. I'm so good
with not having nightmares.
See, I just have them all the time anyway. So I'm just like, yeah, let's bring it on. Bring on the scare factor. Make me feel something. So, speaking of feeling things.
Wait. I do want to tell you, the penitentiary was really cool.
Oh, it looked really cool. It was really cool.
There were 5 different areas that you could go into that were different themes of scary, but each one got progressively scarier.
Oh my god.
To be honest, I thought the 4th one was the scariest. The 5th one, like, it was a big group of people walking through, so I don't know, it didn't feel like that scary. But I do have to tell you, I absolutely learned yesterday that cackling is my fear response. Anytime somebody popped out, I was just like,
ah! I bet that that scared other people so much.
I just, like, couldn't stop laughing. I was like, I can't scream right now, but I'm cracking up because I'm terrified.
That's amazing.
That's apparently my fear response, so that's fun.
I love that. Good to know. The only time I've been in one of those, like, jump scare haunted houses was in 8th grade. My best friend Shannon, for her birthday, we went to Knott's Scary Farm, which is like Knott's Berry Farm's version of the Fright Fest at Six Flags.
Yes. Okay.
And it's way fucking scarier than Six Flags because they don't have to operate on national federal rules because it's just one park in California.
Okay.
And this is also in the early 2000s. So it's really scary. And that's the only time I've ever been to one of those. And I just remember some dude like popping up in front of me and my friends. And my response was, loser! Like, just make fun of them so that they can't scare me.
That's hilarious. Which is
100% a fear response developed from having an older brother who was only a few years older than me.
Oh my god.
But you being at a jail, I'm just going to go with jail over the other word, is actually a solid segue into what we're talking about today. So today we're going to be talking about capital punishment / the death penalty. So capital punishment, the other expression for the death penalty, is the legal execution of a criminal. And this, actually, I didn't know this. The word capital comes from the Latin word for head. So in ancient times, like, capital punishment was often carried out by beheading. So that's sort of where that comes from, which I did not know that.
Before we get started, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you doing this because of a certain botched death penalty thing that happened recently?
No. And I wish that I wish I had included that in all of my notes. But honestly, I did this because I thought I had more time to do my notes. And the death penalty is just something that I knew a decent amount before doing these notes, mm-hmm. because I'm, like, very avidly against the death penalty. So I knew enough that I felt like I could put together an episode and not have it be, like, not doing the subject justice because the research wasn't as in-depth. But we could do literally a full episode on just botched executions. That could be its own episode because there have been so many.
So many.
And I'm not even getting into the way executions are necessarily done right now. I have, like, some of that data, but it's more of just, like, the history of how we got to the point of having the death penalty existing, how we got to the point where we are the only Western country in the world who currently has the death penalty.
What?
Yeah. And it's been that way for a while. So, like, I read this article by this guy, Clive, who I quote later with his full name. And he he's from the UK. And when he was born, the UK had already outlawed the death penalty. Mm-hmm. So when he was like doing research on it and like learning about it in high school, for him, it felt like a very Middle Ages activity. And it wasn't until he was like 15, 16, 17 that he realized that the U.S. was still actively killing people.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a dive into that and how we got where we are, some of the Supreme Court rulings on the death penalty, and then just some facts down at the end. From the Constitution Rights Foundation, which was a big source, and then a few other articles that I quote and reference in there, as well as a podcast episode called Civics 101 from the New Hampshire Public Radio in 2018. That was a really interesting little 20-minute thing that I listened to, so highly recommend that. And the rest of our unquoted sources will be listed in the show notes, of course. So in the American colonies, legal executions took place as early as 1630. With the first one being in Massachusetts Bay Colony that year. As in England, the death penalty was imposed for many crimes, even minor ones such as pickpocketing or stealing.
What?
Oh, yeah. What? You could be put to death for stealing a loaf of bread. What's up, Les Mis?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How could I forget about that?
Yeah, right? During the 1800s in England, for example, 270 crimes were capital offenses or crimes punishable by death. The New York colony instituted the Duke's Law of 1660. And under these laws, offenses such as striking one's mother or father or denying the true God were punishable by death.
Oh my God.
Yeah. While the 13 colonies participated in capital punishment, it's important to note that in their eyes, it wasn't like damning someone to death. Harvard law professor Carol Steiker notes that since everyone almost held overwhelmingly Christian beliefs to the point where denying the true God could be punishable by death, it was thought at the time that if someone was sentenced to death, they would be brought to the state of repentance by the knowledge of their impending death, and therefore would save their souls because they would repent to God.
No.
They saw the death penalty as a form of rehabilitation to get them to repent before God.
And if they did repent before God, would they be spared or?
No. They would still die, but their souls would be spared and go to heaven.
Oh,
but because okay. Like because they knew they were going to die, they would like do their God forgive me thing. And then they could die being forgiven by God. Whereas if they didn't know they were going to die, they like wouldn't be faced with their mortality and going to hell and like all of that Christian stuff.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that a lot.
Yeah, but if you ask anyone today, no one's going to say that the death penalty exists as a form of rehabilitation.
No.
But that's how it started.
That's crazy.
That's how it started. That's why we have the death penalty.
Man, humans are crazy.
Isn't that insane? I had no idea. I had no idea that that's... I thought it was like, we're damning you to hell because like you're a criminal. But no, they were trying to like save their fucking souls.
Christianity is wild.
It's crazy. So when the Constitution was drafted, all of the colonies were using the death sentence. So it was in there and mentioned more than once. Many people point to the fact that it's mentioned in the Constitution as a reason that we continue it. But it's important to note that in the same section that talks about our right against double jeopardy, they mentioned the right to protect yourself against like law and limb, meaning mutilation. Back in the day, part of punishments were cutting off limbs. So the idea of mutilation is also mentioned briefly in the Constitution, but no one's running to be like, yeah, we should go back to cutting off hands.
Can we just pause for a moment? Because I immediately thought of the hard right Christian takeover in Handmaid's Tale and how they take Serena's pinky because she dared to speak out of turn because she was a woman.
And all of that is based on, well, not all of that, but a lot of that is based on the colonial ways that a lot of this was done. Mutilation was a big form of punishment.
That is so insane.
Yeah. To the point where it's mentioned in the Constitution. Like, no one ever fucking told me that mutilation was mentioned in the goddamn Constitution. Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin raised questions and concerns about the death penalty when writing the Constitutions because they weren't really all for it. So it's not like everyone was on board. So we're going to jump forward. Michigan was the first English-speaking jurisdiction in the world to ban the death penalty in 1845.
Good job. Good job.
And when Wisconsin joined the Union in 1848, they did so without capital punishment in their laws. So as time went on and the world went on, the North and South, obviously, diverged in their opinions on a lot of things, which included the death penalty. Northern and Midwestern states would restrict the death penalty and added a lot of rules as to when it happened, whereas the Southern states did not want to restrict the death penalty and were incredibly slow to add rules and like regulations to when it gets given out. Southern whites were terrified of quote-unquote retaliation from the newly released enslaved people. So their response was a reign of terror against Black people in the South, which was a 50-year period of lynching where 4,000 people were lynched in that 50-year period. Carol Steiker, the Harvard Law professor I talked about earlier, points to this and talks about how the Southern leaders didn't like the lynching, not because they were not racist, but because it made them look weak and unable to control the mobs of their city. So their response, the policy they created, she said, had sheriffs essentially facing down mobs that wanted to murder the Black person charged for crimes against a white person, essentially saying and having cops say to these mobs, "Don't worry, we'll have a quick trial and they'll be hanging by sunset."
Oh my God.
In a time period that many historians now refer to as a time and a policy of legal lynching. So it's during this time period where the Supreme Court sees a case in 1932 known as Powell versus Alabama, or known as the Scottsboro Boys case. And this was the first time that the Supreme Court made a rule specific to death penalty cases. The case was 9 Black youths who were between the ages of 12 to 19 and described as young, ignorant, and illiterate were accused of raping 2 white women. Alabama officials sprinted through the legal proceedings. A total of 3 trials took 1 day.
What?
3 trials, 1 day. And all 9 boys were sentenced to death. Alabama law, as all law, required the appointment of counsel in capital cases, but the attorneys at the time did not consult their clients and had done little more than appear to represent them at the trial.
What?
So this fact, this speedy trial that led to a death penalty case with very little representation, made its way to the Supreme Court. And the court held that the trials denied due process because the defendants were not given reasonable time and opportunity to secure their counsel in their defense.
Yes.
Though Justice George Sutherland did not rest the court holding on to the right to counsel guarantee of the Sixth Amendment, he repeatedly implicated that guarantee. This case was an early example of national constitutional protection in the field of criminal justice. We know now that these boys, ages 12 to 19, and the charges brought against them were completely unfounded. And the state eventually issued complete pardons to all of these boys as recently as 2013 because it took that long.
That incident very much reminds me of the Central Park Five.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the predecessor almost of the Central Park Five, honestly. And it's very rarely talked about.
I had no idea.
I didn't see this case mentioned in any of my research. I only heard about it in the Civics 101 episode from the law professor. Okay. She was the only one who brought this case up as the first time the Supreme Court ruled specifically on a death penalty case.
Okay.
So jumping ahead to another groundbreaking case, the 1972 case of Furman v. Georgia, was when the Supreme Court declared capital punishment is unconstitutional, and it was banished. Only for 4 years later for it to then be repealed, because as we all know now, the death penalty is still happening.
I don't know why I was so excited.
You're like, yeah, that's right. It's banned. We're done. And then you're like, wait, shit, no, we're not. Episode over. Okay. I fucking wish. So how we got to the point of that happening needs a little bit more of an explanation. In 1963, almost 30 years after the Scottsboro Boys case, another black man convicted and sentenced to death for the rape of a white woman was asked to ask the Supreme Court to take their case. They appealed it all the way up. However, they didn't. And one of the justices with a very liberal view, Arthur Goldberg, wrote a dissent from denial of review from the court's failures to take the case, saying that it was about time for the court to talk about the death penalty and when it gets applied. And this review, or, you know, dissent of denial to review this case, caught the attention of the NAACP and their legal fund, which is the same legal fund of people who won Brown versus Board of Education. And they catch wind of all of this happening. And Carol Steiker, the professor, was like, it says a lot that in the middle of the civil rights era that the NAACP took on the death penalty as their most important project because of how disproportionately it was being used against black people. So they stepped in for Furman v. Georgia, which did make its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. Furman was a man who was burglarizing a private home when a family member discovered him. He attempted to flee, and in doing so, tripped and fell. The gun that he was carrying went off and killed a resident in the home. He was convicted of murder and sentenced to death. Two other death penalty cases were also being decided along with Furman, Jackson v. Georgia and Branch v. Texas. And these cases concern the constitutionality of the death sentence for rape and murder convictions, respectively. So that's where the another man who was another black man who was accused of rape. So from this court case, the court said that the death penalty was a violation of the Eighth Amendment. Skipped a sentence. The court said the death penalty was a violation of the Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment, and because of the inconsistency in who was given a death sentence and who was not. So there was sort of two sides to this. There were a couple people who were like morally against the death penalty, saying it's cruel and unusual to bring people to death. But the two swing justices in the trial weren't opposing on moral grounds. They suggested that new laws might be acceptable if they provided more clear standards for imposing the death sentences. These next few quotes are taken right out of the 2012 Constitutional Rights Foundation paper on the death penalty history. They just wrote it so well, and I tried to, and I couldn't do it any better. Between 1972 and 1976, 35 states wrote new capital punishment laws to try and meet the Supreme Court suggestions. These new laws fell into two broad groups. One group represented by laws in, is this list shocking, Georgia, Texas, and Florida clearly described which capital crimes could be punished by death. These laws also set up a weighing system for deciding when the death penalty should be applied. So there's like a separate penalty trial after conviction where they have to weigh the mitigating circumstances against the aggravating circumstances to see if the aggravating circumstances were outweighed by any mitigating circumstances. So like, what was the reasoning in which you killed this person? Were they abusing you and you defended yourself and you snapped? Those sort of things. The second mm-hmm. group of laws, represented by statutes from North Carolina and Louisiana, sought to overcome the Supreme Court's objections in another way. These laws simply made the death penalty mandatory for anyone convicted of a capital crime.
Oh.
So North Carolina and Louisiana were like, we'll just fucking kill everyone. Which is insane to me.
I'm just not that surprised that it's North Carolina. I feel like recently I have been learning about how crazy some stuff is in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, you know?
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. So in 1976, the Supreme Court in Gregg v. Georgia ruled that the first type of law based on the act of balancing mitigating and aggravating circumstances was constitutional. So this upheld the Georgia, Texas, and Florida death penalties. The court did strike down the second type, declaring it unconstitutional for North Carolina and Louisiana's mandatory death sentences. They said that the mandatory sentence was unduly harsh and rigid and made no allowance for the particular circumstances of each case. So there was like a brief period of time where there was no executions, but they did begin again in 1977. Some states held off and waited for a ruling on one further major issue, whether the death penalty was being applied equally. So from 1977 through 1985, a total of 50 executions took place, even though almost 2,000 prisoners waited on various death rows around the United States. That's a lot of people. So the Georgia case, McCleskey v. Klemp from 1987, the lawyers submitted a study by the University of Iowa professor David Baldus. Funny name. That showed that blacks who had killed whites had been sentenced to die 7 times more often than whites who had killed blacks. Even after accounting for the other variables, such as viciousness of the crime, blacks had been sentenced to die more than 4 times as often as whites.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The U.S. Supreme Court acknowledged that there seemed to be some sort of statistical racial discrimination.
Seems to be.
In Georgia's application of the death penalty, but the justices ruled by a 5-4 vote that a mere statistical variation was not enough to invalidate the death penalty. To do that, the defendant would have to have shown that the state had somehow encouraged that result, or that there was an actual discrimination in this particular case. Since the defendant had offered no such proof, which would be difficult to acquire, the court upheld the death penalty. McCleskey's case rested entirely on this landmark study, but in a follow-up study published in the 2019 Harvard Civil Rights Civil Liberties Law Review, professors Scott Phillips and Justins Marcoux found that Baldus's study had actually understated the race problems inherent to the operation of the modern death penalty jurisprudence. Following the cases in the Baldus study through the conclusion of the legal proceedings, they found that defendants convicted of killing white victims in Georgia were 17 times more likely to be executed than those convicted of murdering black victims.
Yo, that is...
Mm-hmm.
What?
Georgia ultimately executed 22 of the 972 defendants in the Baldus cases who had been convicted of killing any white victim, while only 2 of the defendants whose victims were Black were executed.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, it's clear as day. What a stark difference.
Yeah. In a Law Review article published in the spring 2020 issue of the Columbia Human Rights Law Review, Professor Alexis Hoag argued that the same racial bias present in McCleskey is prevalent today. Capital punishment, quote, "capital punishment is supposed to be reserved for those who commit the worst of the worst crimes," she wrote. "Instead, as a result of bias, prejudice, and racism, it is disproportionately reserved for those charged with killing white victims." Marshaling 3 decades of data documenting the continuing discriminatory application of the death penalty since McCleskey, Professor Hoag advocated mounting a new challenge to the constitutionality of the death penalty, centered on the undervaluation of Black lives. So now we're going to get into some stats. Since 1976, there have been a total of 1,551 executions.
Oh my gosh.
In April of 2021, Clive Stafford Smith noted, "From 2003 to 2020, there have been no federal executions, and only 4 going all the way back to my birth in 1959. In the 230 years since records began in 1790, we averaged only marginally more than 1 federal execution a year."
Wow.
However, in the last months of his tenure, ex-President Donald Trump presided over the death of 13 prisoners, with 6 conducted after he lost the election. Typically, for a president prone to excess, Trump broke various records, though none was particularly solitary. The most federal executions in 7 months in history, and the first time a president had ever set executions after losing an election.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's crazy. So a part of me feels like this is just speculation. I feel like I just need to say that. But a part of me feels like he was looking forward to being able to do that.
Yeah. It really does seem like that, to just federally execute so many people.
Especially after losing your election.
Yeah. Since 1973, more than 185 people have been released from death row with evidence of their innocence. On average, about 4 wrongly convicted death row prisoners have been exonerated each year since 1973. That's how that kind of averages out. But, like, they're about to fucking die.
Yeah.
And they know that they're innocent.
Where is the sense of urgency?
Yeah. A few of the people that Donald Trump executed, I remember there were quite a few protests and petitions going on being like, "we just need you guys to run this DNA evidence and it's going to exonerate him." And then they didn't and they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Absolutely insane. If people are saying, "hi, there's this evidence," that person deserves to have that tested before we kill them.
Absolutely.
There's no coming back from that.
A report by the National Research Council titled "Deterrence and the Death Penalty" stated that studies claiming that the death penalty has a deterrent effect on murder rates are, quote, "fundamentally flawed and should not be used when making policy decisions."
Tell us more about that.
There is no evidence that the death penalty has an effect either way on people committing crimes. So it's like there's no proof that it shows that it stops them. But the lack of that proof also doesn't mean, like, it's there's no evidence that it does anything at all. It's just there, basically, which is insane to me. The DPIC study of 30 years of FBI uniform crime report homicide data found that the South has consistently had by far the highest murder rate, but they also account for more than 80% of executions. The Northeast, which has 88% fewer than 0.5% of all of the executions, has consistently had the lowest murder rate.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting turn of events.
Yes. So we can point to anecdotal data that shows there's no correlation. We just can't consistently prove that by a scientific standard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I definitely understand that that's something that would be difficult because, you know, can't track every single human. You don't know why people aren't committing crimes.
Exactly.
Or why they are, so.
Exactly. Well, and you can't, like, put a blueprint on the human thought process. But we can look at these numbers and say, oh, it's really interesting that the South accounts for 80% of executions and also has the highest murder rate. But the North has the lowest rate of executions and the lowest murder rates. We can, like, point to those facts. According to the survey of former and present presidents of the country's top academic criminological societies, 88% of these experts rejected the notion that the death penalty acts as a deterrent to murder. So even the experts are like, the death penalty doesn't do anything.
So many experts.
Yeah, 88%. Like, 88 out of 100. Almost 9 out of 10. That's crazy. 30 states plus the U.S. government use lethal injection as their primary method. Some states utilizing lethal injection have other methods available as backup. So I didn't know that we were still doing the firing squad.
I also did not know that.
Yeah, that's apparently still a thing. So executions since 1976 by method used. 1371 by lethal injection. 163 by electrocution. One of those was Ted Bundy. 11 by gas chamber.
I'm sorry, what?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we learn our lesson about that? Oh, nope. My God.
Nope. 3 by hanging and 3 by firing squad. Because, like, someone has to kill these people. And that is a heavy thing to have weighing on you.
I just, like, who wants that job? How are there people that want to take that position?
Well, the thing that's really important to note is that they're not doctors, because doctors have taken an oath not to kill people.
But they're injecting people's body with shit, like, untrained.
Yeah, well, I guess there's very, some kind of training. There is some training, but they get very few training. There's very little training on it.
Especially for the amount of times that somebody's death has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Due to the chemicals not working, or the machine that puts it into their arms is not working.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, and a lot of times they'll have to, like, resuscitate them to then kill them legally.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they can't just, like, kill them right then and there. And they can't just leave them in an agonizing death. They have to resuscitate them for an agonizing life, and then kill them again once they're better. And all of this, again, is not being done by doctors, because doctors have taken an oath not to cause harm. So doctors will not be involved in the process of putting someone to death.
This is absolutely wild.
So just, like, someone out here in this world has to be in charge of murdering these people, knowing that they could be innocent. We like to think it's beyond a reasonable doubt, but as we just said, Trump murdered an innocent man in 2020 with the death penalty.
I just still can't wrap my head around the fact that there's somebody who, like, actually gets paid to do that and, like, wants to do that job. What kind of a sick person are you?
It is not usually someone who wants to, but someone who doesn't have other employment opportunities. There's not a lot of people who are, like, enthusiastically offering to kill people, which is why the firing squad exists. Because this way, I think it's 10 people don't know who shot the bullet who killed him. They all have the ability to, within themselves, deny that they killed that person. But, like, but they did. Someone has to kill these people. And the answer to for a while was like, okay, well, if we do the firing squad, then I don't know, it was me.
But like, you know, I just really hate that because like, if you're gonna do it, then you should need to sit with the guilt of taking someone's life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That should be your punishment for the thing that you have to do as a job. The moral punishment.
Yeah, it's pretty overwhelming. New Hampshire abolished the death penalty in 2019, but the law was not retroactive, leaving one prisoner on death row and the lethal injection protocol intact. Poor fucking dude.
Imagine. Jesus.
Another important thing to know is that in 2005, it took until 2005, the Supreme Court in Roper versus Simmons struck down death penalty for juveniles. But since 1976, I saw that click.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. Were we killing children in jail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So since 1976, there were 22 defendants who had been executed for offenses committed as juveniles.
Oh, that's... No.
Yeah.
No.
And just because we live in a capitalistic society, I got to mention these things. Oklahoma capital cases cost, on average, 3.2 times more than non-capital cases. Defense costs for death penalty trials in Kansas averaged about $400,000 per case, compared to the $100,000 per case when the death penalty was not sought. A study in California revealed that the cost of the death penalty in the state has been over $4 billion since 1978.
Oh.
The study considered pretrial and trial costs, cost of the automatic appeals and state habeas corpus petitions, cost of the federal habeas corpus appeals, and the cost of incarceration on death row. So they looked at the whole thing, $4 billion since 1978.
That is crazy.
Enforcing the death penalty costs Florida $51 million a year, above what it would cost to punish all first-degree murderers with life in prison without parole. Yeah, so it's not just $51 million a year. It's if we just put them in life in prison without parole, that regular cost plus $51 million a year above what that would cost.
What?
They're paying $51 million a year to be able to kill these people. Based on the 44 executions Florida has carried out since 1976, that amount costs to $24 million per execution. They paid $24 million to murdered Ted Bundy.
Wow.
That's how much money the taxpayers paid.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The most comprehensive study in the country found that the death penalty costs North California $2.16 million per execution over the cost of sentencing murderers to life imprisonment. The majority of those costs occur at the trial level. And in Texas, a death penalty costs on average $2.3 million, about three times the cost of imprisoning someone in a single cell at the highest level of security for 40 years.
What?
Yep.
I'm like, why are we wasting our money on this?
Why do we spend any money on this? I could not fucking tell you. Could not tell you. Those are my notes. That's the death penalty, my dude. Like I said, I'm not even getting into the amount of people who have been murdered painfully, like how we do it, botched executions. All of that could truly be its own episode.
We should make it.
We should. We absolutely should.
We'll put it on our running note.
Yeah, the death penalty costs a lot of money. And it's a really weird thing that we do here in America. And I genuinely don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the death penalty. I've had plenty of people come up with like a million just horrible scenarios in which they're like, and don't you want that person to die? That doesn't feel like it's up to me to say. I am just a person. Yeah. So, yeah, I hope that this made you guys think about the death penalty.
Sure made me think. I mean, I've never been okay with it for moral reasons, But now I have even more.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I have shit to back that up.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Katie.
For sure, y'all. Anytime. Yeah, I don't know how to, like, make this happy at the end.
Oh, my God. We don't have to.
Yeah, we don't.
We'll see you guys next week.
Yes, we will.
Bye.
Bye-bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.